Grade 2 Conference, Lecture 19, Teacher Preparation, Part 3. You are probably aware that Rudolf Steiner tells us that after we die, our etheric body goes through a kind of recollection, a replaying of our entire life very rapidly and backwards. And in this after-death tableau, we see in a very, very fast-forward way all that we have just lived through. Not as well known is a description that Steiner only gave once or twice, actually, of a similar tableau that we have before we are born. And it's like this, that conception has already occurred on the earth, and the soul of the child is now going to enter into that, multicellular little being there, which is not yet ensouled. So we could say he's looking down, he or she, depending on the gender chosen, is looking down to the earth, about to descend into birth, or at least into the embryonic state. And right before this descent occurs, a tableau of the life that is to come is presented to this soul. And what Steiner has said is that the more developed a soul tends to be, the more likely they are going to see a tableau in which great difficulties are presented. That a developed individual chooses a challenging life because they have the strength to deal with it. But that it might be that the soul's development is not yet such that it can simply say yes to that, and instead the soul hesitates for what we could call a split second. But in the spiritual world, a split second can be of tremendously great import. And it may be that the hesitation is overcome and the soul descends anyway. Or it may be that, speaking figuratively, that soul has to be pushed out of the spiritual world to fall then into that newly formed embryonic being. And that's like the difference between diving gracefully off a diving board in your swim trunks, your swimsuit, and leaving a beautiful wake in the water and rising out of it triumphantly, or being pushed fully clothed into a swimming pool, not expecting it, and coming up sputtering and a real mess. Now, I bring this because, strangely enough, though this sounds like a tremendously cosmic scene, one way in which we can have a pretty good sense that the individual child before us was pushed is that such a child will have a tendency to be late for things. Late for school first thing in the morning, late in later years in getting assignments in, late in finishing a drawing in main lesson, the last one out of the bathroom, whatever. There's going to be a tendency for someone who does not have a kind of conscious relationship to time. It is not in harmony with time. And we can say this about adults as well. And isn't it interesting that this is one of the big issues, as I said, so big that it's just taken for granted at this point and not talked about anymore, the issue of lateness, of things, reports coming in late, of people appearing late for meetings, last minute before they appear in their classroom in the morning, a whole range of things. And we might say, yes, our colleagues, Waldorf teachers, are probably very developed people, but maybe when they were faced with that tableau, which was the direct karmic consequence of their level of development, they wondered if maybe they wished they weren't so developed and paused and hesitated. And I would say for the children, because very often this lack of punctuality will be accompanied by a couple of other things. One of them will be small or large learning issues, dyslexia, innumerancy, or a combination of the two, or many different things that may be there. And secondly, it is not unusual, it's not always the case, but it's not unusual that there may be a certain slovenliness of dress, that it's as though one sees the higher bodies are not fully integrated into the lower bodies, because there is one moment, one nanosecond, when the soul must descend so that the physical, etheric, astral, and ego are all going to be together. That they come at different times, but one will have set down the preconditions, the kind of wireframe for these members of the body to incorporate in a harmonious way. If we miss that moment, we still will be born, we still will live, and we may live, you know, a very meaningful and significant life, but those higher bodies will not quite be meshed together. There'll always be something sort of hanging out and loose. If you remember that story of the seven ravens, how one of the brothers, the sister, couldn't quite fully disenchant, and he ended up with a wing. And you have children who you feel they're still kind of some feathers, not quite fully in. And how do we help such a child? And I would say, first and foremost, work on punctuality. And for a school, that the whole school would have a punctuality policy that would actually be enforced, that the parents would have to take seriously, because such a child is going to choose a family where punctuality is also an issue, and the parents probably had parents themselves who weren't always so punctual. It's a very powerful, powerful thing. If we can help a child be more punctual, if we can help all of our children, all of our parents with this issue, we will have really achieved something. And if we can do that for ourselves, if we can not be so accepting of late reports and late policy issues coming into meetings and people coming in late to faculty meetings, maybe skipping the arithmetic or the speech exercises or something like that, that would also really help us as a faculty. And here again, as I say, it's, you know, one thing to decide what everybody else needs. How am I? What is my punctuality like? I may be able, as a Waldorf teacher, for the sake of my children, having to model punctuality and having to model a healthy and vital relationship to time, I may be able to take some steps forward, really, in my own development. Just because my angel had to push me into birth doesn't mean that the angel, poor thing, is going to have to spend the rest of its existence with me, pushing me again and again and again, but rather I can start to push myself, and that will free up my angel, and you know, they can take care of more important things than watching the clock along with me. And to add another dimension to this, as we know, especially in the independent schools where this is spoken about all the time, that Waldorf education is a very Michaelic impulse, and that the Archangel Michael is deeply involved in the work in the Waldorf school and the work of anthroposophy altogether. And Michael is a very special archangel because in our time and for another couple of centuries to come, he is the regent of earthly life. So Michael has been promoted, as seven archangels are done in a cyclical way. He has been promoted to be raised up from the status of an archangel, which is a being who looks after people who share a commonality of space, a nation, a folk. He's been promoted to be a spirit of time. So he has, in a way, the role of an archon, or a member of the archai hierarchy, one step higher than the archangels. And the archai look after time. This means that Michael is learning how to be a time spirit, at least temporarily. He's learning how to be a time spirit. He doesn't just step into that and know how to do it right away, any more than somebody who's been promoted to a higher position takes charge of everything, and that's that. You need a period of learning, and in fact, we could say the 20th century has been very much a sort of educational time for Michael. So he's becoming more and more comfortable with time. It's no surprise then that time management and time organization, time, no one has enough time. People are working more time, and whatever we say about it, this is because we are in a Michaelic age. And we as Waldorf practitioners, above all, should be working along with Michael, learning about time ourselves. What is this gift of time that Steiner tells us was the first quality that arose in old Saturn? That it was really Saturn was where time began, the very beginning of Earth evolution. And here we are, still trying to figure out what to do with our time, how to work with our time. So this is something to think about, you know, not only for second grade, but altogether in your work as a Waldorf teacher. You know, you're given very little time to do tremendously important work and make the most of it. Your summer preparation, your preparation during weekends, vacations, every evening, whatever you can do in the morning. Think of all of these times as opportunities to meet time and manage time and work proactively with time to become something of a time spirit in training oneself. Just think about this. We have 8 years as class teachers to work with our students. And the stereotype of Waldorf education is everything moves so slowly. And, you know, the children are just kept in a dream for years and years. And while other children are doing hours and hours of math, Waldorf children do a few problems, and then they get to play, and then they draw, and then they sing. And you have this kind of picture that the world holds of Waldorf as something that is you know, kind of slow, and that does have its own time signature, but it's almost dirge-like in terms of speed. But think about this, that Rudolf Steiner was very aware that the original group of children for whom the Waldorf School was created, the children of factory workers, only would get a grade school education, that they basically would be in grade school for 8 grades, and then they would go on to apprentice with their parents or with others and go into either the Waldorf Astoria cigarette factory or another factory most likely. Whereas the children of the upper middle class, who at the beginning of Waldorf education were a distinct minority, they were mostly the children of the anthroposophists, the bourgeoisie children, they would get 16 years of education. They would go on to secondary school, usually gymnasium, which is like a college prep school in America. And from there, they would go on to the university and probably get advanced degrees, which was true of most of the teachers. There were a lot of doctors among those teachers. So Steiner recognized that what was most important for the future was that there could be, if not economic equality, between the workers and the members of the German elite, situation similar to our own time. He said the economic equality was not the important thing. It was cultural equality. That it was important that workers could appreciate and even participate in the creation of works of art, works of music, poetry, drama, that they could experience science with as much appreciation as a highly educated German or Austrian or whoever could. This meant that Steiner wanted that in those 8 grades, those students would get an experience which would put them on some level of parity with people who would get twice as much education. That 8 years of a Waldorf school would equal 16 years of a conventional German education. And in those days, a German education was an incredible education. It was the model for the whole world, including the United States. So this is very important for us to recognize. Steiner did not create an educational methodology in which everybody's walking around half asleep, in which there are no challenges and few demands made on the children, and in which there's tons and tons of free play when somebody, a specialty teacher, is absent, when a child has finished painting, when it's a bad day or whatever. Oh, free play, go ahead, free play, free drawing. Have some more free play, more free drawing. No, we have to recognize that every minute, every hour, indeed every second counts. We have little time and a great deal to accomplish. And I don't mean this means rushing, 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 or, you know, putting the pressure on the children. Quite the opposite. It means that I live comfortably enough in time that even if every specialty teacher is absent today, I have plenty of things that I can do with the children. In fact, I welcome those absences. It gives us a chance to get a few things done that we might not have. That the only thing there's no time for is free play, or very rarely anyway. That we have work that the children can do, joyful work, wonderful work, beautiful work, but that the children are in school to accomplish things inwardly, outwardly, socially, individually, whatever, and that we as teachers should be there, you know, always having plan A, plan B, plan C, plenty of things to do because there is precious little time and so much to accomplish. So I want to leave that thought with you as the last thing I have to say specifically about preparation. And of course, the subject will come up as we begin to look at matters of the Waldorf curriculum itself in grade 2.